from the heart of Europe to the world. Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones. R-T-I.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Pop Bread. And if you were listening to part one, that's good. If you were not, where the heck have you been? It's me, Eric Wilkes, with Lee G. Banks and Rachel Brunston. For the break, we were talking about Ian Thorpe and how the interweb, had contributed to a whole load of stuff going around that was completely unfounded. And I'm going to remind everybody, because on January the 1st, a new set of laws came in the UK. So if you're in the UK, this is very, very important to you. About defamation, which is, you know, writing the wrong stuff and saying the wrong things about people. Now, in March 1st, there's an addendum to that law which comes into force, which says this, simply. If you own a website and somebody else posts something on it, whoever's been defamed should write to you and say, excuse me, that's wrong, take it down. Mm. The second time, you do it again, but it's three strikes and you're out.
I don't understand this. I know about the new law, but I don't understand this. What if you write?
Well, if you write as well and you own the website, it's your fault.
No, what if you are right?
What if
you
correct?
Put on the website is correct?
Oh, yeah, there is a pre-court action-y type thing that goes on, and if you can prove it's right, then you can. But it's a way of stopping illicit people going onto the internet pretending to be something they're not. And saying bad things about people. And so it's kind of like a three strikes and you're out rule, because if the thing goes on there once and it says, I don't know, Lee Banks robs banks.
Ha ha! God, you just revealed me.
Oh, gosh. So we write in for Lee, and the man takes it down from his website. And then somebody else puts, Lee G. Banks robs banks. And so we write again. And so the third time, it's then the responsibility of the website owner to automatically take it down.
See, it doesn't make sense to me. I know this is like a general sort of knee-jerk reaction politics in Britain. It doesn't make sense.
Why?
You know, because you have the right to say something about somebody if you know it to be true.
Right.
And somebody on a website who puts something, and believe me, I do not argue from this point of view very often, but some blogger who says something true about somebody may not have the resources to actually prove the veracity of what they're saying. And just by the fact that you write to them, say, that's not true, take it down.
It's not quite as cut and as dried as that. Well, I'll rephrase it slightly for you, Lee, being the journalist that you are.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. if it is that it's an untruth,
yes,
and it's pretty obvious it's an untruth, you take it down as a website owner. On the second occasion, you take it down as a website owner. On the third occasion, it's your responsibility, and if you don't, then you're in trouble.
That still doesn't get around the fact that this could be true.
It does.
And that you're being forced...
No. You're not forced to take it down if you believe it to be true. It goes through the normal defamatory process. The idea is to get rid of the junk that's on the internet that nobody checks.
Yeah.
Right.
Thereby not filling up the courts with stupid court cases that should never have gone there in the first place.
Prophylactic measure is it a prophylactic measure to stop rubbish, or could they attach it to dating websites? Could they attach it to dating websites like eHarmony or something?
I suppose they could if Lee wanted to write, I want to go out with you. I am a multimillionaire, 6-foot-tall, bronzed, a full flowing head of beautiful auburn hair.
I'm Adonis.
An Adonis, that's the one. And it was found to be untrue. Then of course
I would have the name Dom.
But then, yes, you could. You know, that would be against the law.
Yeah, no, the way you finally put it, and you must admit that that was incisive journalistic probing
okay.
that I carried out as my, my adopted slide. And got to the truth of the matter. Yes, that actually, this is not a law saying that if somebody says that's wrong, you've got to take it down. You can actually use the recourse of law as you would normally do. Mm-hmm. It actually just saves, like Eric said, a lot of trouble for a lot of idiots, real idiots, the people who call themselves citizen journalists and wouldn't know a story when it came up and kicked them in the face, right, putting stuff on the net and being made to get rid of it. That's a good idea. Well done, Britain.
Good plan.
Yeah, not. Sometimes
that's unusual.
Rach, did I hear that right?
Very strange, like I'm in a parallel universe. Or
yes, I think I've gone off into cyberspace.
I wonder if somebody will make me take that down.
Right. Anyway, we move on from that aside to something that's really confusing me, boys and girls. It's the Amanda Knox case in Italy, and there's now an extradition demand from Meredith Kircher's brother because the first case was found guilty. Then there was the appeal which said she was not guilty, so she went home to America. Now they brought up another case where they say she is guilty. And there's something not right here. I don't know what it is.
I don't understand it.
Why is it not right? Why do you think it's not right?
I don't know.
Balance. Is she guilty or is she not guilty? How many trials does a person have to have? Isn't there a double jeopardy situation? What about all the evidence? There's so many question marks. It's shocking.
I think the simple fact is that you have to accept that she is guilty. You know, she's had enough trials now to be proved innocent, and the last trial, which again has still got to go to another trial, is saying that they both are guilty of carrying out an horrendous crime. And I don't think everybody seems to be trying to feel sorry for Amanda Knox and her boyfriend
Raphael.
Yeah, when in actual fact, you should be feeling sorry for the Kircher family.
I agree with you.
I'm just confused as to where the Italian judicial system works.
The double jeopardy.
I just don't understand.
Thing.
Yeah, where's that? Tell me about that.
Well, the double jeopardy thing isn't operated in Italy. It's simple as that. Yeah.
Not.
Right. Okay.
The fact is that the trials keep going into the evidence about and the probabilities of this case and finding again that she is probably guilty of this crime. And law is based on probability.
Did the last case say chuck it out?
Because of the way it was presented, and there was a serious doubt about the evidence that was presented at that case, but it was felt serious enough to go to another stage within the trial process, and the double jeopardy thing, which Rachel mentions, might actually be a way of her escaping going to jail anyway. Amanda Knox escaping going to jail because double jeopardy does operate in America.
Exactly.
If there is there's going to be a tug of war between Italy and America of whether she should be extradited. And one of the plainest rules or addendums within the double jeopardy law the law of extradition in America is that is double jeopardy. It's made clear. And that can be used to stop her being extradited.
They're not just going to cough her up. No. I mean, meanwhile, you know, her ex-boyfriend, this Raphael fellow, has been, you know, caught between the border of, you know, Italy and Slovenia or something, and he's been nicked. And of course, the other gentleman involved in this was convicted in the first place. Mm. And he's already been in jail for quite a while now. But the whole thing just is, you know, you have to. I feel terrible for poor old Meredith Kircher's family. I think this whole thing's an absolute ordeal for them, regardless of who did what to, like, regardless of, you know, what happens in the end. Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is, somebody lost their life in the most horrendous way possible in a foreign country, away from. She must have been so terrified and frightened at that moment, and you just can't imagine what that poor family has gone through, and to have this regurgitated over and over. over and over. They just cannot get any peace.
The, no, they
that
can't.
Poor family.
No, they can't. But you've got to get to the. In these cases,
yeah.
Like in any case, you've got to get to the truth of the matter. And sadly, the people involved in a case like this are the ones who suffer. And it's just the way of the world, unfortunately. And I do feel sorry for them, same as you. And that's why I said at the beginning we should be thinking about them. But it's. Mm. If the courts, you see, if what is said was happening at the time that this girl died, then she was complicit in it.
Mm.
And therefore, you know, it would not necessarily be this horrendous thing for her. But it the whole thing is so unsavoury and so bad that really, you know, if three people have been found guilty of this crime on numerous occasions now, if we do believe in the law of the world or the law of the land, then we have to accept that the law has done its job properly and that these people are guilty.
Good point.
And she should be extradited.
Good point. We move on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the UK coming up with another law now of their own. And I have to say, I kind of like the idea. I don't think it's at all workable, at all. No, it's not. Anyway, the law is, and this is going to surprise people in Europe for sure, there's an attempt to change the law whereby smoking in a car where children are being taken to school or taken on a trip or whatever is going to be made illegal in the UK. And I just don't kind of understand. Well, A, parents shouldn't be smoking in a car with children anyway, because that's just really beyond the realms of...
It's unfair.
Well, it's just despicable, to be honest. It's no different to... It's as bad as drinking alcohol in a car with children as well. And allegedly there's going to be an MP's free vote on this within weeks, meaning that the Prime Minister doesn't want to go one side or the other because he's chicken. And the whole thing just seems a bit weird to me. I just...
We've done it here.
Have you? What's it been like?
I think it's really difficult to police. It's, you know, it's, what are you going to, I think it's very difficult to police. I think it's been in effect in Canberra. They've had a smoking ban in cars with minors under the age of 16 since May 2012.
Right.
You get an on-the-spot fine.
Mm-hmm.
And in New South Wales, there was a ban of the same since July 2009,
okay.
In Queensland since 2010, in South Australia since 2007, in Tasmania since 2008, in Victoria since 2010, in Western Australia since 2010. So it's pretty much everywhere, but I think it's one of those things, because it's been here for a while, it's a shame factor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're driving down the road and you're puffing away on your durry and you've got your little kitty in the back, there are going to be 25 people around you who are going to harangue you.
Mm. Well,
you're going to not do it. And you don't want to be seen to be doing it. And if the police see you, they will stop you and they'll fine you. But I think it's very difficult. Our country is different, and it's, you know, it's geographically it's different. The way our roads are set out are different. The opportunities for the coppers to grab you in these situations are different. I think it has to be done on its merits, every case by case. But it seems to work here. I never see anybody smoking in a car with the kitty in the back, even a pet.
Oh, well, that's okay. That's okay. I was going to ask a random question because I'm a, you know, I shouldn't, but I do, and I shouldn't, but I do in the car, and I wonder, because you've given up smoking, Lee, so good luck to you.
I'm starting again today, actually.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're not.
Okay, I'm not then.
Right. Have you ever smoked in a car?
I've all smoked in the car, yeah. With the job I did, which was out on the road 24 hours a day, I lived in the car. I smoked in the car. I ate in the car, everything.
Office.
Yeah, it was my office, yeah, and my boudoir. Mm. And it was... But this story it has another... No, you shouldn't... Eric's quite right. You shouldn't teach your children to smoke. You shouldn't smoke where it could possibly affect children. And it said that that if you smoke in a car, the effects of the smoke are 11 times stronger than they would be in a pub. And it's banned in pubs. But there's still this thing that rankles with this kind of legislation that the UK government seems more and more happy to put out, that this is absolutely an infringement of your civil liberties to be able to smoke in your own private space. And the fact that you should be grown up enough to know that you shouldn't smoke if you've got a child sitting in a baby seat in the back of your car.
You should and exercise for the your adult brain and, absolutely. And use common sense.
And I think, yeah. Absolutely. I think you're right, Lee. The danger there is that if you carry on in this vein, you know, ultimately it's going to be a law of when you get a tissue out to wipe your child's nose.
Absolutely, yeah, and just think of the way things have gone with the way we protect children in the UK now. It's absolutely incredible. The children are almost allowed by law to run wild and free because there's nothing you can do to stop them doing that without running the risk of being prosecuted.
Yeah. And I will say this, kids have got to go out.
Yeah.
They've got to get dirty. They've got to graze their knees, cut their arms, cut their fingers, do everything else.
Without the parents having to go to jail because they've done it.
Yeah.
Get an immune system.
And the other thing is, often children come second in sporting events. They don't always win.
They shouldn't get a trophy for mediocrity.
Correct.
I think that's a very good point indeed, yeah.
Yeah, they come second.
Why are we celebrating that winning is somehow a bad thing and that just, you know, turning up and rocking up and just, you know, muddling through is somehow acceptable in life in general? That's not how the universe works.
It doesn't.
And children are hard. They're going to be horrified when they get out of school and they're not given accolades for just rocking up. I turned up to work and I want to start. Well, you get paid to turn up to work, so sit down at your desk.
Yeah.
The reason this is happening is very simple. It's because of the middle-class oiky left-wing trendyism created by the likes of Pete Seeger.
Here we go. I knew you'd have to go back to it. Anyway, there was some very clever television this week, boys and girls. It really was. Because there was a couple of kids with the Pope this week. The Holy Father was doing his prayers. And these kids were there to let a couple of lovely white doves go off into St. Peter's Square. At which point, a nasty, horrible seagull came and attacked them.
And a crow.
And a crow.
And they
ate
them.
It's like The Omen.
I know, it's terrible. It's like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, isn't it? We shouldn't be laughing at it.
It's an orthonological nightmare.
Well, how do you protect those children from the horror of what they view?
It's called the real world. It's the real world.
Well, you let them pee stubs off into the air and some nasty old crow comes and gets them. It's like a new world war.
But it's what happens with Mother Nature.
It is.
That's true. You're quite right, but it shouldn't happen in the Pope's house.
No, it shouldn't.
The Pope's front garden.
It should be a crow-free zone.
I don't know.
Why didn't they shoot the crow?
I don't know why the story got so blown up, because it's just nature.
It is. It's funny, and also, actually, if you actually watch it, I must admit, I put this story up, and it is funny because actually, if you notice, if you watch the videos of it, the pea stumps just flew off.
Yeah, and I have to say, there's a serious side to it because Pope Francis was appealing for peace in the Ukraine, which borders us and where we are, and there have been deaths from protesters, and now the president's gone on sick leave.
He has, hasn't he, the poor love? He's 62 and he's a bit poor.
He's gone on sick leave. You wimp.
That's like Nero fiddling, isn't
what
it?
What a wimp. What a wimp. Do the right, do the horrible thing.
No, don't be horrible. He might be really poor. He might have an ache.
Yeah, he might have stubbed his big toe.
Yeah.
But anyway, a bit of Aussie madness coming in now because the Australian Prime Minister threatens to deport asylum seekers if they are irritating. Oh, I'd get chucked out. Spit. No, I don't know that. Or swear in public. I'm definitely
whack.
This is Tony Abbott.
He is an absolute numpty nightmare of a human being.
Yeah.
And is he's every time he opens his mouth, I don't know if English is his first language. I must check because he's an absolute dolt of a human being. The man cannot string together an intelligible sentence to save his own life. And now he's going to write this code of conduct. First of all, the immigration minister, Scott Morrison, doesn't talk to anybody. There was our actors were on, our version of our Oscars was on last night, and the MC, Shane Bourne, said, Scott Morrison is also now making a feature film. It's a silent film. I'm like, brilliant. Because the man doesn't speak to the press. He won't attend a press conference.
Hang on a minute.
He won't talk about anything.
A sense of reason here. If he, now, just hypothetically, Rach, before you get too cross, hypothetically, if it is that your PM is saying, if you want to be an asylum seeker and come into Australia, then we expect you to behave in a certain way, which means we don't want you going and spitting everywhere as they do in some countries where asylum seekers are coming from, where they consider it to be normal. Mm-hmm. They also consider, you know, things that would be very irritating to Australians and Brits and various other countries as normal in the country where they came from. Now, I have to say that, you know, I drive on a different side of the road because I'm in a different country. Mm. I don't expect to walk into Tesco's, or other stores that you can find everywhere, and, you know, the people are going to speak to me in English. It's not their problem. Right. And I think asylum seekers have got to be a little bit balanced here. And
I've got no problem.
Actually, acknowledge
it. What you're saying. Right. You're right. And, you know, when in Rome, you know, and when in Rome, you know, when in Sydney, don't spit. It's real, you know, don't do it. Don't spit. And that's fair enough. But when he's talking about, you know, starting things like spreading rumours at work and, you know, what, this is just a normal code of human conduct.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's human conduct. It's common sense. It's things that you just, as general, nice, everyday human beings, we just don't do to each other. I don't need some buffoon in Canberra who looks like he's a taxi with the car doors open telling me how to conduct myself in the workplace. It's completely
ridiculous. Were you
referring
to his ears?
I am. And he's a mad monk. He's out of control. He's absolutely out of control. This is ridiculous. And what does he even care what asylum seekers do? He doesn't let them in the country anyway.
Well, there you go.
Isn't it worth pointing out, though, that this is actually, and something should be done about this man, Tony Abbott, because surely this is the equivalent to Hitlerism, being born again.
No, I don't think so. I think things would get far more controlled if that happened. We stay in Australia because, careful what you say, Rachel, because Sir Richard Branson is a character that's loved all over the UK. So,
and be careful what you say, because I own a spot.
But I'm not there, so I don't have to be careful.
Oh, all right. Anyway, Sir Richard Branson has slammed Australia, criticising them for their shark cull. And what they do is, it's horrible. They throw these bins down and kill them. It's horrible.
We don't like the shark cull either. We don't like it at all. There was a big protest on a beach in Perth a couple of weeks ago.
Well, apparently
4,000 people turned up.
There's another one this week as well.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's their turf, man.
Yes.
We happen to play in their pool. If they come walking on land and start chewing people, well, then that's one thing. When we go and swim in their pool, we're asking to, you know, interact with them in their environment. We have to take what is given to us. And they're predators by nature anyway. Dude was hungry, probably. And generally speaking, most of them aren't actually vicious. There's only a certain couple. No, you do your research. Back up.
I own a shark. I have a 6-foot shark in my house.
It's stuffed.
It's stuffed, it's dead, but it's stuffed, yeah. But it lives in a big glass case. But I have a personal problem with this, where I agree 100% with what Rachel's just been saying. But my problem is that in 4 weeks, I'm actually in Perth, and I don't want any sharks there when I'm going out in my speedos.
That's all right, your bits are so little. Lee.
What?
Lee, sharks are big, and they eat big things.
speedos.
With your speedos on, there'll be no problem.
Yeah, but
oh, Rach. Rach.
What?
What you could do is call Tony Abbott.
Yeah.
And say to him, go out.
Start calling.
Yeah, go out and just phone him up and say, just to prove the point, Tony, that sharks are good, why don't you go and have a swim with them?
Yeah.
He wears those budgie smugglers. He's famous for it.
Oh, is he?
He's famous for it, yeah. So I think we should.
Budgie smugglers with that. Him in.
Yes. It's very odd. I don't even know how he doesn't sink.
Like a saloon door.
I don't know how he doesn't sink. But. I think we should send him in there with a bucket, just with a bucket, and throw a bucket of chum in behind him. And just
Anyway, quickly on to the school in Milton Keynes.
Oh, unbelievable. Brilliant.
They are now going to find people if the kids are 15 minutes late, for picking up the kids, this is, by the way, at around £6 an hour or something like that. No, it's more than that, isn't it? They're going to charge parents £60 if they turn up late in the mornings as well. And I'm just thinking to myself, why do schools continue to cane people? They just don't change. There's never a carrot. There's never something for doing something right. It's always, I'm the school teacher, I'm in charge, I'm the school teacher, I'm in charge, I'm an academic, I'm in charge. You're not.
Well, they are. That's
no.
the problem. They
no,
are.
No. Lee.
Yes.
No.
What?
Who pays what? Their wages?
Well, exactly. But then who pays the wages of the people who pay their wages? You know, the problem is with the whole of the social structure, and it's not just in the UK, because I'm desperately trying to be nice about the UK at the moment, because it's nice, it's rainy, and it's all upset and wet. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is the whole system of education.
Rubbish.
See, let's put it this way, right? We have children. We meet somebody, we get married, and we have children, unless you are Hugh Grant, where you don't bother.
Hold on. Quickly, we're running out of time.
And then you hand them over to the state for the next 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the state looks after them for you. And the only the only thing that the state allows you to do is take them on holiday once a year, which you have to pay for, and you have to go when the schools say you can take them on holiday. Mm. This is, the state controls your children. It teaches them what they want them to know. It makes them act in the way they want them to act. And this has this wonderful twist to it that actually anybody in Milton Keynes who has children at that school, be late to pick your children up. Give them the £6 an hour because it's a damn sight cheaper than paying a child.
And, finally, boys and girls, as we get to the end of the time, it's the Numpty of the Week award repeating itself because the death of Facebook, which is being so widely reported by numpties, has resulted in the fourth quarter revenue for Facebook jumping 63% to a whopping great $523 million. And not only that, the Facebook shares have risen by 51%. That's for all the academics out there who know better than everybody else, you numpties.
And remember, all you people who are on Facebook, that the only way that this company's managed to do this is by turning your life into a commodity and giving you lots of imaginary friends.
Say goodbye, Lee.
Bye-bye.
Say goodbye, Rachel.
Goodbye, Rachel.
From the heart of Europe to the world, Radio Tetris International. Online on Windows 8 PC, tablets and Windows phones.